boring noises.
Welcome to Super Garbage Day, a retro video game review show where an actual garbage man plays games 20 years or older that you, the listener, chooses. Every episode, I randomly pick a game submitted by the community to play, kindly dissect, and then we discuss. Welcome to episode 53. I am your host, Don't Call It a Comeback, LL Cool B Ross. So what's new in the land of Super Garbage Day Incorporated? Well, after a small hiatus, I decided to change the format just a little bit. I was finding that trying to play a random game every week and do the side project podcast and review the games properly was far more challenging than I expected. So moving forward, I will be giving the games that are chosen from our Patreon pool a lot more attention and releasing the episodes when I have played a significant amount of the game and I feel comfortable. To make up for this, though, the Patreon-only series Backlog Eternal will now be released on the main feed, that being the Super Garbage Day channel, moving forward. So hopefully this helps me balance my work-life schedule better and I can produce the best episodes I possibly can. And thank you all for your support. Speaking of Backlog Eternal, Julia had a little bit of a difficulty figuring out Portal 2, the mechanics, so that's put on hold for now until we can figure that out. Since then, I have moved on to Dark Souls, which won the vote in December. And another reason is she's absolutely obsessed with Hogwarts Legacy and has put in about 45 hours in one day. But good for her. That game looks pretty awesome. You can check out our Super Garbage Day YouTube channel and occasional streaming on the Super Garbage Day Twitch. Links are in the show notes. Now it's time for Retro Question of the Week. What? What's that? The Discord channel got erased? I don't have a question of the week. Okay, I'll just pull one out of thin air. This question comes from me. What item is in your retro collection bucket list? So, something I want to buy in the future to be a part of my collection. Well, definitely an original Xbox 360 OEM sealed wireless controller, because those are my favorite controllers of all time. I still use them today. I use the dongle with my Steam Deck or with the PC. There's just something about those controllers that feel perfect for my big, crazy, jalopy hands. And I like the idea of using batteries. Like, the AA batteries last forever, and there's no having to worry about the battery pack going out. Plus, I think they look cool. They look now kind of retro-esque, but still have a modern feel. And I would absolutely love to own one that's never been opened. I think that's really cool. And these ones I'm using now are almost 20 years old, and they work great. So, I mean, if I ever plan to open that thing up, I'd probably have it the rest of my life. So, that's my answer. If you want to add to the retro question of the week, since the Discord channel is back, feel free. It's empty. So go on the Discord. It's just get in there, drop some question loads, and that's weird saying. I don't know why I said that. Okay. Now it's time to ask, what are you playing? Right now, Dark Souls 2. And then after that, it's going to be Celeste. I might just start Celeste during Dark Souls 2, because I'm pretty much playing Dark Souls 2 just recreationally. It's not for the show or anything. And I'm about 10 hours deep into it. And so far, I guess my take on it is it's different. We'll see how it goes. I definitely don't want to give anything away. I might do an episode on it. I don't know. It doesn't really fit anywhere. It wasn't chosen by anybody. And I like my shows to pretty much be chosen by the public or the community. So I don't know. Maybe I'll just tell you on the Discord how I feel about it when I beat it. But that's it. And of course, Julia's been getting down on some Hogwarts Legacy like a motherfucker. Okay, well, I think it's time we jump into this week's game. And it's been a long time coming. I appreciate the patience, but your boy is back and everything's going to be A-okay. So let's talk about Fax Xanadu on the Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah!
And before we get into this week's game, we're going to bring a close friend of the show back to discuss, because he himself did a stream on this game and I believe beat it. So who better than to bring onto the show than our friend, Van Fertel. Xanadu is an action role-playing platform video game developed by Hudson Soft for the Nintendo Entertainment System. Nintendo released the game in the United States and Europe as a first-party title under the license from Hudson Soft. Fact Xanadu is a spin-off or side story of Xanadu, which is the second installment of Falcom's long-running RPG series, Dragon Slayer. The title Fact Xanadu is portmanteaually formed from the names Famicom and Xanadu. I don't know what word that is, but I don't care. Fact Xanadu is a part of the family of games that also includes Legacy of the Wizard, which I believe is the fourth installment in the Dragon Slayer series, and a game I have played and I hated. All right, so now let's bring in Van Fertel, who also has played Fact Xanadu. And we're also going to say from the get-go that that's how we're going to pronounce it, because that's how it sounded on the show Captain N. Van Fertel, how are you doing?
Hey, B-Ross. Yeah, good, man. How you been doing?
I've been great. Van and I were like talking quite a bit before, and we got to catch up, and it's just good to be back and talk retro, and really talk to somebody about this game in particular. This is a game that I never played until it was pulled from the Patreon pool. But it was a game I knew about because I always remembered the cover art.
Yeah, you know, I was exactly in the same boat, because this is one of those games that when I was a kid, it was heavily featured in Nintendo Power and that kind of thing. So I knew all about the screenshots and all that stuff, but I never actually played it. Maybe a little here and there throughout the years, but just last year is when I actually gave it a serious playthrough and went through the whole thing.
Yeah, that's right. If you don't know this already, and we're going to bring it up again later, Van Fertel has a retro stream where he does three times a week, streams live on YouTube. His channel will be linked in the show notes, so check that out if you want to see him beat the old good games. And also, he's a fellow Shell's Angel, which is we've created a gang where you have to beat the hardest NES games to join, and he's a fellow Shell's Angel. Please don't sue us, actual biker gangs. All right, let's talk about first impressions. This is a game of dangers and wing boots, mantras and monsters. And upon firing it up, I thought, okay, good looking intro screen, good music. Hit play. See, it's kind of a cutscene. You don't see that very often in the games of this age. And this came out like, I think, what, like 87 or something?
I think it was 89.
Somewhere around then, but it was kind of interesting to see a lot of this progression for in on the Nintendo at this age. And I thought, as soon as I got into the game and was able to control my character, it clicked. I was like, I have played this game as a kid. This was one of those games that I put in my system and played for like 30 seconds and just shut off because I didn't understand and just played something else I knew. So, but revisiting it, it was a game that I thought, wow, this is pretty impressive. Reminds me a lot of Zelda 2. It reminds me a lot of Castlevania 2, except it looks real. The palette's weird. It looks really dry and like kind of decrepit. And I think that just kind of fits the whole storyline. Apparently, yeah, you're a wanderer or unnamed warrior who returns to their hometown, and I guess the dwarves attacked it, and now the water's gone and everything's going to shit. But for the most part, I was impressed. It being an NES game that I don't remember playing. When did you first discover Fact Xanadu, and what did you think about it?
So, as I said, I knew about this game from magazines, but when I actually played it for the first time, it's a funny contrast, the fanfare from the title screen, then when you start the game, everything is so gloomy. there's just this, the color palette is very drab, it's muted, everyone looks very depressed. They tell you, you know, talk to the king, like there's monsters around everywhere. So the contrast from the that title screen music to when you start playing, it reminds me a lot of, as you said, Simon's Quest. You know how that game has this isolated like gloomy feeling to it. Also, on a more modern example, I felt a little like, I hate bringing this game because it's so cliche, but Dark Souls also have this feeling that the world is just gloomy and horrible to live in overall. It just doesn't feel right. You know, something's off from the get-go.
Yeah, and it feels, and it's weird for a game, I think, of this early to give you that feeling. And it's also, I remember, recall as a kid, not liking that vibe, I think, and not wanting to go any further. Another game that did that for me as a kid was a game called Eight Eyes. And I actually was confusing these two games for a long time until I actually had to sit down with this game.
Is that the game with the bird?
Yeah, you have like a bird you control. Yeah, and it's kind of, you go to like different countries and it's kind of, it's a little Castlevania-y.
That's one of those games that I know about and I don't know exactly what it is. I just remember there's a guy that looks like Simon and has a bird. That's about it.
I honestly, same. I always confuse this game and that game all the time. So maybe that's another one I got to try out down the road. So this game, we should talk about the gameplay. So it is a side-scrolling action RPG. You can go both directions, you know, left and right. You have like towns, and then your main quest is to get the water fountains, the life source turned on, and stop the evil one. I can't remember the name of the main bad guy, but ultimately you have to go through this like tree. It's a gigantic, enormous tree that is like the whole world, or at least the game world you're in. And your hometown's at the bottom, and then you have to traverse different areas. And it's actually a really big game, and it is very Zelda 2, except with like no world map. And it's very Castlevania 2, except I believe, you know, like, I don't know, not as cryptic, kind of, but it's definitely wears those on its sleeve, but is definitely its own thing too. And it does a lot of things well. You know, you don't even start with a weapon. You have to talk to the king, who just gives you money, and you can exploit him and keep using all the money and go to zero and go back and talk to him. And it's as if he's never met you before, which is funny. Yeah, but,
and he gives you the golds, plural.
Yeah, the golds. And then yeah, every town's kind of similar in the way that it has like a hospital, and then it has an area that sells dried meats, which ultimately do the same thing. It just refills your magic and your health, but one's significantly cheaper than the other. And then you have, you know, your item shop, which, you know, is important, obviously. Then you have like weird stores that don't make any sense. Like, oh, let me teach you Kung Fu, or let me improve your magic. And it's really expensive, and it's no different than just getting like the dried meats or buying a cheap potion. Right away, I felt from the beginning like there was like some weird balance issues in this game. And it became more prevalent the more I played.
Yeah, it's an odd game. It's like they had a lot of good ideas, but weren't sure how to implement them. And maybe it's a translation issue, but a lot of the things they tell you, like the guy who, oh, you want a martial arts lesson? I'm like, sure. Then you buy the martial arts lesson. I literally didn't know what I just bought. Like, I couldn't, like...
It refills your health. That's it.
So what? Why will you call it a martial arts lesson just to, like, get your... It's just so weird. And then there's the whole item management aspect of the game. If you say, hey, I'm going to stock up on potions, I'm like, cool, nothing can kill me now, then congratulations, you can't pick anything up because you got too many potions on you, you know?
Yeah, you got to use them. And also you have other things like, what is it? It's not the potion, but the bigger one that when you die, it refills your health automatically, but you can only have one at a time. And you're able to buy that from the get-go. I like the idea. What this game does really well, and I really do like about its gameplay, is that it has great control. And it has great mechanics in the sense of being an action RPG. You feel more powerful as you upgrade your items. You know, your character, for the most part, doesn't, as you gain experience, and it has such a weird leveling system. We'll get into that. But your character doesn't really get more HP. It's based off like your equipment. And the better equipment you buy, the stronger you are. And you get like a shield. And what I really, really respect about this game, and I think it's really cool, and this may fall a little bit into the graphics and audio section, it all shows up on you physically. And I absolutely am a sucker for that.
Oh, yeah.
Like anything you buy, you see it physically on you, even if it's like a different suit of armor. The sword, if it's longer, it's significantly longer. The shields look like different colors. I f-ing love that, man. That's one way to win me over. And this game did it in 89, which blows my mind, because games like Final Fantasy 2 weren't doing
this. No, and the thing is, I just double checked. It came out in 89 on the US, but it was actually an 87 game, so it's even more impressive.
That's what I thought. Yeah, 87 is originally what I thought, but yeah, it's, to me, I think that its presentation is one of its strongest areas. And, you know, it is a little confusing, though, because when you're thrown into it, if you don't know what you're doing, I will give it credit. It has a really cool manual. But outside of that, it's a lot of trial and error and a lot of blind trial and error, even on the first level, to figure out, okay, I need to get a key. I need to talk to the king. I need to buy a weapon. I need to waste money to figure out that I don't need to go to these stores ever again. And then eventually, when that's all said and done and I feel ready, I can traverse into the world and go to the first dungeon or towers, as they're called. However, another road bump that hit me and made me think, like, this game's got some like quality assurance issues was like the consumable keys.
Oh, God.
It's already, the inventory system's already kind of sucks. But on top of that, the keys are consumables, which means if you have a key and you have to have a certain kind of key, there's like four different types, right? And they're all based off the suits of a card, a king, jack, joker, whatever. Yeah, you open the door, the key's gone, and then you have to use a key again to use that same door. No, it's just not. It relocks.
That was so unnecessary. The thing is, like, if you unlock the door, just leave it unlocked. But sometimes I will go into a door until it turns out it's one of the towers. I'm like, okay, wait, I'm not ready for this. Let me just go out real quick to like save or whatever, get a password. And then I forgot I used up the key, go to town, get a password, go all the way back. And I'm like, oh, great. I need to go back to town to buy another key. It got me so many times. Like, I will make progress and I'm like, oh crap, I just gotta walk all the way back. And this game's not easy either.
No, and it does have an extreme amount of unnecessary backtracking because of this really weird inventory system and there's a lot of consumable items that shouldn't be consumables. However, though, like I said, it does a good job with your loadout. You know, thank God the sword and everything is in your inventory, you know, and then once you upgrade, it just replaces the old thing and you don't have to worry about it. But, you know, you want to use the hospital, right? You're hurting and you come back to the town, heal up, and it charges you out the ass. Or you can go next door to the dried meat store that does the same thing as the hospital, but significantly cheaper. And I thought, well, you're going to figure this out once and never go to the hospitals. Why are they even in the game?
I don't
understand.
And then there's even like a third way because, you know, if I don't know if you want to talk about the leveling system like right now.
Oh, God, it's so weird. It's so weird. Yeah, let's get into it. So please, Van Fernal, go ahead. So
basically the leveling system is once you have enough experience, you talk to a guru. And the guru will level you up. He will give you a new title. And all this does, from what I gathered, is when you die, you start with more money. So pretty much, if you're the first level, you pretty much lose all your progress when you die. If you're on the next level, when you die, you have certain amount of money you keep after death. But I'm pretty sure you don't keep it. You just, that's what you start with. So
Yeah, it's really bizarre. And there's titles, right? Like you said, there's different titles. They're based off your experience points. So once you reach a certain echelon of experience, you go to the guru, who originally were priests, and it's really clearly a priest, but they changed it because America's like, do not put religious stuff into games, but which is okay. The guru, and you have this really, I'm going to put a link in this show notes for this, but you have this really funny YouTube short of you using the guru, and he says, he gives you the password by saying, all right, let's hum a chant or something, or let's meditate. And then he's supposed to be meditating the whatever the password is. But if you're reading it and you're like immersed, it almost seems like he's saying that. And it's just a bunch of nonsense. And it makes for a really funny clip. But it's the password system is okay. I appreciate it. However, I'm going to be honest with you. I was using save states in this game, and I use an EverDrive on the original system. But what I did was I was like, there's no, after like a couple of times of using passwords and backtracking, I was like, there is no way I'm going to get further in this game by having to restart, put this password in, then collect the gold, pass what I had, and then go back and then just die again in an area that I'm trying to figure out. So I do recommend use save states. And if you want to be fair, use them in the guru area so that you just feel like you're saving in your save point area, you know? And that's how I kind of made it like more modern, kind of a quality of life change for me. But yeah, I think it's weird. The level system also, it works deleteriously against you in some ways, because certain power-ups you get, like wing boots, which allow you to like fly practically, which is necessary to find certain areas and activate important things in the game. You have a timer, and the higher level you are, the lower the timer is for the wing boots. I don't understand that. That's another thing where I'm like, Faxanadu devs, what is all these like contrasting things that go against like your good design with really terrible quality of life choices you've made that are glaring.
And then then there's the pendant. Did you know about the pendant?
That. Okay. So yeah, I got to the pendant, and I might add like these, I like these towers. I like the idea of them. I think they do a good job with the enemy diversity is really cool. The designs of the enemy are really cool. You do have to kind of get good. All the enemies do different things. They drop different things like bread for health, which is great. Before I get to the pendant, I just want to explain like the towers are cool, but there's unnecessary towers. At the end of a tower, there's usually a boss, and that boss, you know, you kill them and you get an item that's important. There's a specific dungeon. What is the name of the dungeon? Like Suffer or something? Is it the Tower of Suffer?
I think it is the Tower of Suffering or something like that.
Yeah, and these towers have interesting names. They have like Trunk, Suffer. There's a town called Victim. It's really bizarre translation. But yeah, you go there and then you traverse through the whole dungeon. I'm just going to call it a dungeon. And when you get to the end of it, also, this game is big on backtracking, because even when you beat the boss and get the item, you got to go all the way back and get out of that dungeon. But you get to the end of this specific dungeon and you kill the boss and you get this pendant. And apparently the pendant was originally supposed to double your strength, your attack, and your defense. But I guess because of a code error in the creation, the development of this game, it does the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. So basically how this old games were, you know, you got a code, so item, it's a binary value, true, false, 1, 0, whatever. For that particular item, it's inverted. So the game takes it from the get-go. When you start the game, you actually have the power-up of the pendant active. So if you don't know anything and you grab the pendant, you effectively take the effect off, which it must have been a coding error on their part. But you're so far in the game, and then you just grab that and you just handicap yourself.
You don't even know. You practically just new game plused halfway through the game.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people who originally played it were like, what is going on? Why is the game, why am I taking so much damage all of a sudden from these enemies I was destroying? And to me, honestly, that is almost like a cardinal sin in a game.
No, yeah.
And this game is really, it's a polarizing game for me, because they did so much right, but God, they did so much wrong. And almost all of the wrong is just not playtesting it. You know, it's like very, it seems very first draft, but I don't know. I mean, a lot of the items are cool. I like the boots. I like you can get potions where you're just invincible for a while and it helps you traverse. I also enjoyed that as you upgrade your shield and you upgrade your armor and your weapons, that it also like reduces magic attacks, the damage, sometimes completely. However, like you said, it's an extremely hard game. Like there are enemies that will just serve you your lunch in like three hits and boom, you're dead. And then you just have to discover that on your own.
That area, what's it called? The Misty area?
Oh, that's later on in the game, yeah.
Yeah,
it's a cool part of the game.
There's like all these like flying beasts or whatever. And if you don't like, if you're not careful, they will just like maul you.
Yeah, and you got to be sure you're stocked up on your potions and everything. And what's also was weird too, this game has like item levels, like our scene, like areas that are, you know, you traverse this game screen by screen, and there are certain screens that if you go into it four times, you have to go in and out of it four times. And the fourth time you clear the enemies and you get a hidden item. And I think that's cool, but it's exploitable. Just like I'm stating again, the devs kind of didn't quality check these things. You can just do that over and over and over and over and just like stock up on, for instance, one area you can get wing boots if you just do this over and over and over. Then you can go into the town and sell those wing boots for a ton of money. You are pretty much unlimited gold. And then another section, it's potions. So you don't have to buy potions. And so, but it can work against you. It can give you items that you can't get rid of or sell that are just stuck in your inventory that you already have because you need one, you don't need two, and you just got it. You now you have it the rest of the game. To me, it screams not play tested well, and it's annoying for a game that I think is otherwise well done from a gameplay standard and from a development standard. There's just so many things that keep reminding you that it's got problems.
I think a lot of this has to do with the fact that, you know, the Dragon Slayer series was made by Nihon Falcom. The RPGs were the whole shtick, you know, but this particular spin-off was made by Hudson. And I think RPGs just weren't their forte. You know, they were doing, what, Adventure Island around that time? So I think they had a lot of green people trying out an RPG, and they just didn't quite have the hang of it just yet.
What a contrast graphically between those games, huh?
Oh, yeah, no.
Man, wow. Yeah, but I think that's it. However, I don't know, man. It's just incremental things just... It's kind of just elementary to just have things work this way. Like you go into like Mascon is like a town, right? I'll use the example. And, you know, like you go into every place has like a shop, a key shop, a hospital, and a dry meat store. So the hospital will fill up your life and magic to a certain extent. It costs 1,000 gold. The meat shop does the same thing. It costs 180 gold. Like I can't get over how broken that is. And like, that's any dev, I think, could have been like, wow, we should probably, I don't know, make the hospital. What I would have done in that situation is I would have made the meat barely raise your stuff and maybe not your magic, and the hospital like raise everything one hit, maybe not that as expensive. So you just kind of weigh your options, you know. It's like a balancing thing. This game does not have good balancing as far as its functionality and the way you play. I do think its items are great though. Like it does this perfectly fine with like the magics you buy and you get, and the your swords and your shields. It's all done perfectly. Everything else is not. So I can't quite wrap my head around how they messed up these things that are.
Yeah. So that kind of goes back to what I'm saying. The RPG part of the game, it's all broken. The basic part, just equipment and combat, it's perfectly serviceable. It's well done. The combat is weighty, you know. It does have you do have pre-swing frames, kind of like Simon's Quest, you know, how you have to wind up your whip. So the combat, it does have a weight to it and everything. But then they did all this nonsensical RPG stuff for the sake of being an RPG, and they didn't hit the mark.
It's got a little weird area of design too that make me scratch my head, like gaining momentum to jump, you know, it's not really apparent at first. You don't know that you need to just get, you need to start walking to jump further, because it doesn't really feel like your guy's going faster, but you have to. You have to like get kind of a running start, even though your character's not moving any faster than they normally walk. Your jump's just further. Later on, as you level up and you get better equipment, it's a little more obvious that you're moving faster. But that in itself is like, just why even have that? It's already difficult to platform in certain areas, because a lot of this game is platforming, and I think it's one of the weaker parts of it, especially coming from Hutzensoft, who like kind of knew what platforming was. However, you know, the game's diversity makes up for that, because with that comes just a difficulty spike throughout the game. But it's kind of fair. Like, it takes a while. It's annoying, but it's fair-ish. And when you do make some progress, you feel it, and it feels good. And I had to, award this game for that they did that kind of correct. But it's definitely, you have to be in the know of what to do. And as you get further into the game, it just gets more difficult. And at least it's not really repetitive. You know, it seems on the surface like it is, but it really isn't. It's like I said, I love the diversity of this game, and it is definitely an adventure, and it feels like an adventure. But is there anything else you want to add to gameplay?
Pretty much. I think we hit most of it. Oh, another thing that we have to mention is that a huge part of being successful in this game is the magic system.
Yes.
You have to get the most powerful magics and everything to make progress in the game and get through it, because just swinging your sword will only get you so far. Some bosses will just positively wreck you if you don't have the magics. And some of that magic, getting the strongest one, requires a lot of backtracking. Some of the most powerful spells are in the beginning area of the game.
Which is weird. Like death. Like one was just called death. But you also need a lot of rings. There's items we didn't really talk about that are necessary to even get into certain areas or even open up dialogue boxes with characters. A lot of these are rings that, oh my God, I have to bring up this, because this was a big turning point in my playthrough of this game. So I just finished getting all, like, pretty much turning on the two fountains, and I finished that one tower, and then I go and I get my Joker key, and I go back out. And I go where I need to put the Joker key in. I go and put the Joker key in this. Immediately have to fight a boss character I fought earlier as a normal character. And I'm like, oh my God, he's super hard. But I beat him. I go one screen over. There's a guru or whatever guy standing there next to a thing. I talk to him. He says, yes, I'll turn on the third fountain. Thank you. I say, cool. All right, I leave. And then I'm like, where am I supposed to go next? And then I get up to the top and realize I'm supposed to talk to him twice.
Oh yeah.
The second time he gives me a ring that I need. Without that ring, I cannot continue into the next part of the game. Nowhere does it state that. And it caused me to have to go back into the dungeon I just beat, get this item again that I need, get another key, and go all the way back, fight that same annoying boss that's now just a normal enemy, and then talk to the guy two more times to get the ring. And I was like, bro, this is too much, man.
No, it can get cryptic in this game.
That's just not good. Just give him, why won't he just give you the ring when he tells you he's turning on the thing? It makes me mad, because the whole reason you're going to talk to him during the whole dialogue at that point is to turn on the third fountain that you need. So you talk to him, he's like, of course, I'll turn on the third fountain. You're like, thank you, and then you leave. Nothing is indicating, hey, talk to him again, and then he's gonna be like, oh, by the way, take this ruby ring that you're gonna need. It drove me nuts. It was like that and the pendant. I was like, all right, well, this game made some oof, it broke some laws that I don't think it can come back from. Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely flawed in some aspects.
Yeah. All right, well, let's talk about something that's really positive about this game, at least from my perspective, and we'll see how you feel, and that is the graphics and audio. Okay, so game looks great. I think it's fantastic. I like the way it looks, even though it's a little drab. It uses a weird palette that is not normal for the system, but it uses it purposely to show you how effed up the world is, how dry it is, how it's defunct of life. And then even in certain parts of the game, as it changes the levels or you go into different worlds, it does so much cool stuff I didn't see in other games, like parallax scrolling of fog in front of you. And then as you get further up, this giant tree gets greener and the enemies change and they kind of reflect the environment. I mean, they did a fantastic job on the sprites in this game.
You can tell what everything is. Well, most of these things, like I think a meteorite hit the planet and turned the dwarves into alien creatures. So, but you can tell the sprites are very clear. The limbs, the heads, everything. You can tell these aliens, like their features really well. So they did a good job with the sprite work. And yeah, the world is drab, but it does add a lot to the atmosphere of like this world. Like, you know, when you think that your character, he's an elf, I believe. When you think like elves, you know, they live in forests, green fantasy worlds, and this is all brown and drab, and you can tell just his world is just wrong. It's not how it's supposed to be. So I think it works a lot in its favor.
I'm not sure what he is, but I do know that you work to help the elves. And I think it's funny that this game has another thing I enjoy in older games is, you know, when you get dialogue boxes with full blown profile pictures, and some of these are hilarious, like the guy smoking, and like it looks like modern day dudes, like it looks like dudes from New York. Like I lived in New York, and almost all these guys, with an exception to the king, look like people I met in New York in warehouses.
No, the funny thing is, like a lot of these people, they look very depressed. You know, they're like. But then the smoking guy, he looks like, the world's going to end. It was going to end anyways at some point. I don't care. I'm just going to like
it. He looks like he's got through a divorce, but he's happy about it.
He's the guy that sells keys, right?
Yeah, he's a key dude.
He's like, dude.
And he's
like, kid.
Business is good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's like, kid, I sell keys for a living, man. I don't care.
And they break after you use them. So I'll see you soon. Yeah, that's a good part of it. And as you were saying about the enemies, they give off some kind of like, just they're gruesome looking for an 8-bit game. I mean, they're kind of nightmare fuel. This game would kind of scare me as a kid.
They do have a like an HR Giger kind of vibe to them. You know,
they've got
like
a Contra Metroid-y kind of thing going on.
Yeah, which is actually something I really like, because again, it's a big contrast of clearly like elves and all that, like fantasy setting, and then the enemies were clearly aliens, which did not belong in that world. Yeah, because the thing is, like in a setting like that, a dragon, a killer plant or something within the world, it makes sense, but these clearly were out of place.
Yeah, and they try to just play it into there with some of the dialogue boxes early, and I'm like, okay, a meteor now, like what is going on here? We have like high fantasy and science fiction, but at the same time, they made it work. I could tell what was what, and it's a lot of these creatures, especially these bosses, are it's great sprite work. They're terrifying, and kudos. I mean, I can't really say any. I don't think they could have made it look any better, really, with what they were given. So I think it's a top of the food chain as far as graphics are concerned for the Nintendo Entertainment System era, and it's music. Oh my God, the music's great. That's the first thing I immediately complimented when I played it, when I fired it up. I was like, this is a bop. And then the towns have kind of like their town music, but I liked it. The dungeons have different types of music. I just felt like it was well done, well composed.
Oh yeah, no, the out of the gate, the music of the first town, it's so melancholic, you know, it gives you an uneasy feeling. And I feel like it parallels a lot of Simon's Quest. You know, Simon's Quest has a soundtrack that just hits different. It's so gloomy and just something that doesn't feel right about it. I felt a lot of that in this game too. It's not like a high fantasy, a bopping soundtrack in terms of like, you know, like Zelda, which is like you're in for an adventure. Here it's just it feels kind of hostile even at some point.
I would describe it as it's RPG music, but not upbeat. You know, it's like non-upbeat action RPG music.
This is clearly, they went for dark fantasy type of more instead of high fantasy. I felt they were going for some dark fantasy, you know, gloomier types of vibes.
Oh, they nail it though. And I think that team should get major credit because they didn't half-ass any part of that. And even the graphics change from the, you get it, when you're beginning of the game and at the end, you have like the same cutscene, but it's like completely renewed. And I guess I'm ruining it, but whatever. You know, it's kind of the beginning scene again, but now, like, everything's brought to life and looks really bright and happy. And I don't know. It's just something about the amount of effort they put into the aesthetics in this game, both audibly and visually, that tickled my fancy, man. I just think it's good. It's really good.
Yeah, especially considering it came out in 87. That's almost it's one of the first Nintendo games when you think about it. It's what, 85, 86?
Yeah, so it's kind of slept on a little bit too, I think. I mean, I know it's a cult classic, but in regards to the way it looks and like what came after it, I'm like, why didn't they just make a sequel to this? Because after this came Legacy of the Wizard, which graphically looks worse. Gameplay wise, yeah, I think is worse and is way more complicated. But Legacy of the Wizard and Faxanadu are both games that I think you get your money's worth because you ain't beating them on a weekend. That's for sure.
Yeah, they're not rentals, definitely.
Well, I think we should give our final verdict on this. And let me ask you, you completed this game. You did it on your stream. If anybody wants to watch that, check him out on Van Fernal's Retro Stream on YouTube. Link will be in the show notes. What's your ultimate feeling about Faxanadu from beginning to end?
So I just went back to just like kind of revisit my thoughts, my contemporaneous thoughts. And I did give it a 4 out of 5 when I played it. And it's because clearly the game does have its flaws. And I did recommend that you have a guide going into this game. There's no need in modern times to play this game blindly, because the same as Simon's Quest and The Legend of Zelda, you're not gonna intuitively get through the whole thing. But it did so much right. You know, the graphics, the music, the gameplay is also solid. It's one of the earlier Metroidvanias that actually, you know, had a open world where you could backtrack all the way to the beginning and unlock new areas, new abilities, etc. So I think this game was ahead of its time in a lot of aspects, and it did a lot right. And I think that pretty much any flaws it has, the good stuff about the game outshines that by a lot.
Interesting. How did you feel about the final boss?
The final boss was the final boss. I can't lie.
It was like a big dragon-y thing. It was from my understanding, or it wasn't a dragon-y thing, it was before that, but it's called the evil one. It was like this giant skull with feet, stompy feet. It kind of looked like something from Metroid meets Star Wars, but it was like a giant like skull with fangs and feet stomped.
Oh yeah, that thing. Okay, so it just had,
it was like kind of easy, surprisingly.
Yeah, but you know what? At that point, because I do remember you had to fight like a dragon before that at some point, so I don't mind that the final boss at that point, I think I was done with the game, and just the final boss being like just kind of easier, I'm all for it at that point, because this game is, it takes a lot out of you to get to that point, so I don't think it overstayed its welcome in that aspect, and just hitting a wall on the final boss in a game like this and going back to the guru and all that. And, you know, I personally didn't mind that much.
Okay, well, there you have it. There is your official Van Fernal review. So, okay. Faxanadu is a very interesting game for me to play. And I spent a lot of time with it because there was a little bit of a hiatus in the show. So I get to spend more than a normal amount of time with this game than I normally do. Moving forward, I'd like to do that more, and I'm going to, but this game, it's it's clearly made well, and it has character, and it has a world that obviously it's a part of this big legacy of this Dragon Slayer saga. That's there. The graphics are great. They even, for the fact that it came out, this game came out in the 80s, it still matches even some of the best looking NES games that came out afterwards, with the exception of maybe things like Mario 3 and I don't know, Yoshi's Cookie. I don't know. But it just looks so good and it sounds so good. And its controls are tight, I believe. Some people didn't like the controls. I figured once you figured them out, you grow with the game. You grow with its difficulty. You grow with increasing your items and your speed and your level. However, it's got so many problems. I mean, consumable keys is awful. The hospitals and the dry meat store situation is just stupid. The leveling system is just bizarre. The password system on top, you know, connected to the leveling system, doesn't make much sense. I just let me get that password and be exactly where I was when I was there. Talking to NPCs twice to have to get items that you don't know you even need. Otherwise, significantly backtracking to figure this out. I mean, the game demands you use a guide, and even with the guide, it's still kind of annoying that it's a flawed. It's just flawed. It shouldn't be that way. The exploitableness of the game too. You can just exploit money in the game, even from the giggle, from the jump, from the first level with the king, or with the item rooms, and then ultimately the pendant. Being an item that was, they openly stated, was a programming error, just screams to me. The quality control ruins this game. Personally, I think it's beautiful. I think it sounds great. I would never recommend anybody playing this game because you're going to have to follow a guide step by step, and that's not fun. That's just not fun. I think that's a lot of the reasons why people kind of hated on Castlevania 2, even though I like Castlevania 2 more than this game. It's just that crypticness that's a little too much. At least in Castlevania's defense, the crypticness was like meant. In this game, it's some of it is due to bad programming. And so, unfortunately, I give this game a D. It's beautiful. It is such a missed opportunity. But I really cannot recommend it. Some quality of life adjustments, and this game's top tier. It really is. It's up there with some of the best. And there are ROMs where people actually did this. So if you're going to play this game, I highly recommend you look up the Faxanadu Quality of Life ROMs where they like fixed a lot of these problems. But the way it is, I can't. I can't do it. And I feel bad. Dude, I feel bad saying that. But honestly, it's just not a good game in the condition that it is currently.
Wow. I didn't see that coming. I thought you had a better time playing this. But I do have maybe a hot take here, but I still believe, for example, this game and Simon's Quest, you cannot criticize its crypticness and inability to beat it and then declare The Legend of Zelda as a masterpiece. I can 100%, all of those games are on the same boat. You need external material to get through them, and I will die on that hill.
Okay, so, I agree. However, Legend of Zelda doesn't have crypticness through bad coding and development.
Yeah. Oh no, definitely. That is,
it forces you to explore every inch of the screen. And there is some like translation issues. If we're talking about the first Zelda, right? Cause I hate the second Zelda,
but yeah, the first
Zelda. Yeah. I mean, it's built that way. Faxanadu was not. Faxanadu was built well, but had some, it's like a pretty car that's going to have a lot of engine problems, and you're going to repair it, but you still might like that car, but you, goddamn, you had to sink so much money into it
so
to keep driving it.
I get what you're saying, because Simon's Quest is also the same way, but it does have that Konami quality to it.
I can say there's a majority of Simon's Quest and Zelda 1 that I can play without a strategy guide. And when I would hit walls, I'd use the strategy guide. And this game, you need the strategy guide for the from the first town.
Yeah, let's see. I I think I the first time I had to consult was when I needed to find the fountains. That's when I got to that point, which is pretty much what the second town, maybe.
Yeah, that's like the second level.
Yeah,
pretty much, I would so consider I didn't get that second part.
So yeah, I get what you're saying, but back then we were supposed to play the games with the power, you know, Nintendo power. So this game it's was true. Actually published by Nintendo themselves. Which
it was featured heavily in that magazine.
Which is kind of surprising when you think about the quality issues, because usually if Nintendo attaches its name to something, if anything, it's going to be polished.
It was polished. It's just innards were messed up, you know? That's what I'm saying. It's a beautiful car. It just has a bad engine.
You know? Like, you just polished the outside.
Maybe
and
not
so
even
rusty.
The engine's good, but the you know like the brakes are kind of always break, and the steering wheel may need steering wheel fluid more than you would like. But I don't know. I don't really have another analogy. It's just the way I feel. By the way, this game. I know this game was submitted by Brent Van Tassel from the Sofa King podcast. So check out that show if you want. It's a great show. Good friend.
So between your D and my 4 out of 5, which is kind of a B, so we can settle around a
C. C, I guess. I think that's fair.
But, yeah, so pretty much just if you're going to play this on modern times, just make sure you have a guide and there's no shame in using save states just to get through the adventure. This is not a game you play for the challenge, for the fun of it. It's not like a platformer. But if you want to see the whole thing through, no, it is flawed, but there is a lot of there's a lot to see here, especially when you taking consideration when it came out originally.
And it is fun. I will give it that. Like I said, there is a sense of progression in it that I did appreciate. But, you know, there's just the flaws are too glaring. I don't know. That's all I could say. All right. It's time for you. I'm sending you the link. As usual, the guest gets to spin the wheel and pick the next game. So,
all right.
May God have mercy on thy souls.
Oh, well, let's spin that wheel. What we're getting here.
What is it?
It is a PlayStation 2 survival horror game directed by Keiichiro Toyama, which was the director of the first Silent Hill, and it is Siren.
Oh, no kidding. Siren? That's like that was just submitted. Wow. That's a Kenshiro banger right there. That's one of his. Okay.
Yeah, I've only been submitting the same game like every month for the last year, and it doesn't
you
get
and
picked.
Keith.
And then
Keith
this guy
too.
Just submit. No, I'm not salty. I'm not salty at all.
Well, I don't. You know what? You know what's funny is I've made sure it's been so long. You guys keep submitting Little Ralph to the Patreon. It's got like five or six submissions. It's got like a 40% chance to win, and it never gets picked. And I refuse to look it up. I don't want to know anything about it. So I'm still waiting for that day. It's got to come. It's got to come.
Yeah, it's a meme at this point.
All right. Well, join me next time as we come back and talk about the game Siren on the PlayStation 2. I think I've heard of it, but I don't really know anything about it. So
I'm very familiar with it. Yeah, have fun.
I enjoyed survival horror games, so I like that Evil Dead game on the Dreamcast. So.
Yeah, I'm not giving anything away, but it's very unique. That's all I'm gonna tell you.
Okay, good to know. I want to thank the patrons. You keep the show alive. For $2, you get access to over 30 plus episodes of exclusive content, such as retro deep cuts and special events like the Super Garbage Bowl and the 12 Minutes of Christmas, which is on there. I did not expect that to be like a 2 hour 30 minute event, but I'm happy I put that together in December. If you got this far in the episode, please consider leaving us a review. It helps the show grow its audience. And as usual, I want to give a shout out to the shows I listen to on the daily or watch, like Van Fernal's retro stream on YouTube. Link in the description. Tadpog, which is Tad and Derek play old games. I forget, but Tadpog is hilarious. And the Retro Hangover with Chris Copeline. That guy is the hardest working man in retro podcasting right now. And I guess the main quest podcast, listen to it while you can. what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I just want to throw some shade, but whoever, like, if he knows who I'm talking about.
He knows. All right, well, join the Discord. It's free. It's a small community of like-minded misfits like you and I, and you can vote on certain topics like the games picked for Backlog Eternal and other fun little things. It's a great community. It's really, really awesome community of people that are just the best. So, as I said, all the links are in the show notes. Van Fernal, I appreciate you being here. I think I've plugged the living crap out of your show, but you want to give us a sneak peek on what's coming down the pipe?
Yes. Yeah, so, tomorrow, by the time this airs, but the next big thing I got going on my stream is that I'm still going for the NES Rite of Passage 2, and I am going for a Buster-only play of Mega Man 1, and that thing has been brutal, but it will not break me, so that is pretty much what I'm trucking along my main goal on the stream right now.
You'll get it, dude. You're already like you've done the whole run practically in two streams. So now it's just time to put it all together. And I feel very confident your next stream you're gonna get that. So thank you for being a part of the show. Always appreciate you coming on. It makes the episode so much better instead of just me being by myself and being like, yeah, now there we go. And it's like a 20-minute episode. I'm like, God damn. Oh, but thank you very much. Join the community, keep retro alive. And never judge a book by its grammar. May COD be with you and have a super garbage day. Cut to B. Bye.
Thank you for watching with my dad. I just want to say, everybody, guys, bye.